This is extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. Dialogue Conspiracy number 222, and this is June 21st, 1976. I date these programs so that people who are collecting them or sending them away can keep a record of the particular day that they were made. I don't consider them to be dated by any means, and you can refer back to these programs. It's important to refer back to them if you have a series, and that's why we continue to date them. The important thing in my mind right now is the summer of 1976, with political conventions coming shortly, and bicentennial celebrations, particularly in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., and the chances of counterintelligence and violence, which have become as American as apple pie, just in the media, not actually taking place on our streets, known as terrorism. And I'm going to be talking about that today, and the involvement of the CIA training with the park officials. There's so many agents in Washington, D.C., that they now say you can't tell the CIA agents their operations from the ordinary police enforcement. They're working in Washington, D.C., even though the charter of the CIA clearly stated they shouldn't be working domestically. But there are a few things I want to talk about, and then we'll get into domestic counterintelligence. There are copies of my Playgirl article available. I had reprinted, and I get letters about that and didn't have copies for a long time. The one on the burial of Howard Hughes, December of 74. If you want those, you can write to me and send 50 cents in a self-addressed envelope, and I'll send you a reprint of that Playgirl article with my allegations that Howard Hughes was buried by Aristotle Onassis in April 1971. Also, there's an excellent newsletter published by David Miller in Florida, it's Gainesville, Florida. It's called the Gainesville Journalism Review. David Miller has gotten out quite a few copies. The last issue he has is on Anwar Sadat and the Nazis, and also the CIA and the Miami Cubans, and an article on Gerald Ford called No More Nice Guy. I think David Miller is one of the top researchers in the United States. He lives in Florida. And if you want copies of those, I have them at the house, and you can send me 50 cents and a self-addressed envelope. His article is a large one, the size of The Realist, so send one of those large envelopes, and I'll send you the Gainesville Journalism Review, because all three of these articles are very important for you to have. Copies of these broadcasts are available now. I also get letters on copies of Dialogue Conspiracy. If you tell me what week you want and the subject matter, reprints of these tapes, or we're getting indexes made of Dialogue Conspiracy, the master tapes, reel-to-reel, are $4 plus postage, and cassettes are $4 per show. And you can write to me at Box 3904, Carmel, California, 93921. And I can get you copies of these shows for reel-to-reel or cassette. I didn't announce on Dialogue Conspiracy the article I did for Midnight Newspaper, that small newspaper. It's similar to the National Enquirer or the Star. They're sold at Safeway and drugstores and newsstands. The one that I did June 14th, Richard Nixon's Pals, CIA Linked to RFK Assassinations, is off the stands, and as I say, I'm sorry I didn't announce it ahead so that my listeners could get it. Midnight's published out of Montreal and has quite a large circulation, and the next issue to come out in the next week, they come out every 2 weeks, so it'll either be the next week or 2 weeks after that, is a long article that I did for Midnight on Oswald in the U2 with my allegations that the real story behind Lee Harvey Oswald isn't with the Cuban or the Cuban sympathizers, but it has to do with his role at the Minsk radio factory in the USSR, and that his co-worker Alexander Zeiger had links to the Central Intelligence Agency. Midnight did a marvelous job on this article. They reread it to me, and it should be on the stand next week, and you can get that and maybe write to them and ask for the one on Sirhan. And then 2 weeks after that, look on the newsstands, or I believe it'll be 2 weeks after that, they are doing a third article of mine based on a show I did on Dialogue Conspiracy last week, June 14th, the death of 30 material witnesses to the Watergate affair within a four-year period. And they are printing into Midnight the article that I did for Dialogue Conspiracy, which is great because then you can see it in printed form as it went on the air, and it reaches a circulation of about 3 million people and keeps the information moving. I did want to say I'm going up to the trial of the San Quentin Six at Marin County this week, and those of you that live in Salinas or Santa Cruz or Carmel area that want to go up with me, or we get a carpool of people, there's too many for one car, call me at the house, and I'm going up this week to the trial, the end of the week, and I'm very interested. I haven't been up to the trial since a few months ago when Louis Tackwood, the agent provocateur, testified, and he charged complicity to the Los Angeles Police Department and the California criminal authorities in fomenting those long-made plans to kill George Jackson, and then as a consequence of those killings, to put the charge on prison radicals. The six men are charged with the death of guards and fellow prisoners, and this trial is going to the summary phase, and it's very important, and I think they need support, and the jury needs support to see you there. So if you want to go, you can call me at my home this evening or during the week, and I will be going up to the trial of the San Quentin Six this week. This is an important event to see. The politicizing of many innocents in the American system would take place if you went to trials such as this. It happened to me when I went to a trial in Salinas to see one of the defendants, Hugo Pinnell, a few years ago, and I think it's an interesting phenomena that you should go to. The Attica trial was thrown out and completely dropped. The charges were all dropped, and the San Quentin Six trial proceeded. The charges should have been thrown out right from the beginning. The prosecution announced right from the beginning they had no material evidence to link the death of the guards or inmates on the defendants, but they were going to go into circumstantial evidence, and that's all they've gone into. So the summary phase should be both terrifying and interesting. On Dialogue Conspiracy, a few weeks ago, I think June the 7th, I talked about a case in Los Angeles that had all the ingredients of a political assassination of a president of the United States that involved the Los Angeles Police Department, the Highway Patrol, the CIA weapons, the use of the Secret Service and their ammunition, guns with silencers, Russian weapons to blame the left for the murder of a president, and the media suppression of this event and the guard for the President of the United States being involved. There hasn't been much about it in the newspaper until this last Friday, and I have one article which went over the AP wire services but didn't hit any of the 10 papers that I take daily. It took one paper, the San Jose Mercury. And the lead article this last Friday was Murderer Gets Ammunition, U.S. Agent Gets Sacked. It says a Secret Service agent whose name is Fred Nagel, who occasionally guarded President Ford, has been fired after Treasury Department ammunition turned up in the possession of a convicted murderer. The dismissal of Agent Fred Nagel as a result of an investigation of missing ammunition was confirmed by the Secret Service. Fred Nagel is the gentleman I said guarded the President of the United States, who was involved with the highway patrolmen, the LAPD, the law enforcement in Los Angeles, and supplying ammunition to a man who was a known murderer. This murderer was getting ammunition from the Secret Service. And to make the story even worse, the exact chronology wasn't printed in the first accounts, but Nagel helped protect the President of the United States, Gerald Ford, on his West Coast trips. His punishment was to be suspended for 30 days. But what you have here was a duplication of the whole assassination plot scheme that has been done in every past assassination where silences were used, police departments were used, weapons were planted, and getaways were allowed by various highway patrolmen of the particular agents in the assassinations of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and George Wallace shooting. So there's one article here that Secret Service agent has been suspended for 30 days, and he was supplying ammunition to this motley crowd, including a known murderer. Well, the summer of 76 can be a hot one, depending upon the way the wind blows. It's a bicentennial summer. Clarence Kelly has been photographed holding up 200 extortion demands with letter bombs There was a man in Georgia that was held down this last Friday, threatening to set off a bomb, and it later turned out that it wasn't a terrorist threat at all. It was a literary bomb. He was talking about not a literal bomb, but it gets a large 5x7 picture of a person being wrestled by the police in Atlanta, Georgia, as if terrorism were really rampant on our streets. And then when you read the small print, it was a literary bomb. The FBI director is concurring along with congressional committees. If you heard the news earlier on KLRB, Senator Strom Thurmond's committee about violence in Philadelphia and violence in Washington, D.C. And the July 4th could be a chance for the counterintelligence to set off bombs or violence, such as happened with the anti-war demonstrations, and blame it on the left. This is a tried and tested technique to come down on the left and discourage any organization or criticism of the government. June the 18th, just last week, the CIA revealed what they called a newly classified document dated April 76, stating that terror would increase in the USA, and they even went on to say that fanatics would use nuclear bombs and chemicals, biological and radiological agents. Now, in the summer of 74, exactly 2 years ago, in my realist article, The SLA of the CIA, I stated the CIA had created their own terrorist armies through dummy front organizations that not only would include kidnapping, bombing, but I said chemical warfare. The CIA could have saved 2 years and maybe $1 million or $2 million to come to the conclusion of things that I was writing 2 years ago in The Realist, and the threatening of chemical warfare here is just an extension of terrorism that was launched at the time Patty Hearst was kidnapped, which I believe had nothing at all to do with kidnapping, but to launch this American terrorism and get ready for these 76 elections. It, by all counts and Gallup polls, Mr. Jimmy Carter will win the election, and it depends how desperate the people in Washington are to stop the election, how far they'll go, what they'll drop, and how far they'll blame the left. Hitler used terrorism as a tool to unite the German people together. Hitler had his own buildings bombed, the famous Reichstag fire, and rounded up the left and the critics of his government. He couldn't have gone ahead with conquering the countries he did, or World War II, the loss of 80 million people were involved, without provoking enough violence so that everybody suspected the critics of his regime, and it was very successful. The propaganda about terrorists and kidnappers and bombings, I believe, could be halted within a very short time if the SLA had been properly investigated, like the Watergate was only a view of it taken and closed up, but it's still seeping out. And the SLA has not been investigated by good journalists on the left, middle, or right to really break open the seeds of the CIA. And so long as the CIA or the FBI do control the investigations and the courts, we can look forward to this Operation Chaos that the CIA was planning under the guise of the left. Now, an important article came out just a week and a half ago, June 6, 1976, in the Washington Post. It was a long article, and it's an important article because it's the first of its kind, almost since the history of Nazism, to come out and state that what appears as the left violence in specifically Mexico City is really the work of rightists. And if American journalists did this same kind of investigation into what's happening in this country, they would find that the kidnapping and terrorism so far is this Hitler type of violence. The article is titled Grim Mexican Puzzle: Killings Laid to the Left Look Like Rightist Work. It was written by Marlee Simons, Washington Post, and if you're a student of conspiracies, go to your library and get it, June the 6th, 1976. I'll read you what the article states and interject a few comments or similarities to what's happening in this country. It says, Mexico City, the scenario is becoming a familiar one. Terrorists storm a bank, they stage a kidnapping or gun down a random group of policemen. Witnesses describe them as young women and men who carry automatic rifles. Then they speed off in getaway cars. Soon afterward, the police tell the press that the terrorists shouted, "We belong to the 23rd of September Communist League," or they leave behind pamphlets with their names. In America, we have the famous diaries of Oswald and Arthur Bremer and Sirhan, or the writing on the walls like the SLA. The article says, a few days later, a few suspects are arrested. At first sight, it appears that the 23rd of September Communist League is another leftist urban guerrilla organization. But increasingly, Mexican political analysts and journalists are questioning the authenticity of the League as a leftist guerrilla report. They are strongly suggesting its numerous dramatic actions stem from the growing hysterical and militancy among the Mexico's far right. June 6, 1976, six policemen were killed, or in June 76, six policemen were killed, four wounded by open fire. There was no political propaganda or attempt to publish the manifesto explaining the action. This is from the newspaper account in the Washington Post, which is similar to the LaGuardia Airport bombing in December 75 or the Francis Tavern in New York and a lot of unexplained violence in this country. No propaganda to explain it. Ransom in the Mexico is only for money, and they don't want kidnapped or imprisoned colleagues. You remember the SLA that Joseph Romero and Russell Little were in San Quentin and charged with the murder of Dr. Foster, but never once did the SLA ask for their imprisoned colleagues. It was only for money from Randolph Hearst. In Mexico, the kidnappings and murders cause denouncements from high government officials and provoke a public outcry over the shooting of low-level policemen. In the case of American terrorism, you get the woman in the Carmichael Bank that was shot, or in Lebanon, the U.S. aides are shot, and Gerald Ford is saying we can't stand this violence or terrorism. The denouncements are loud from the high officials, and the low-level agents are shot. In Mexico, when people are detained afterwards, the police give scanty biographical details of detainees, so scanty that no one can really relate to any political background they have, which again is identical to arresting the Emilia Zapata group in Northern California that were allegedly bombing Safeways and power companies, or the George Jackson Brigade up in Seattle and Washington area, and the New Dawn group. The people that are being pulled in, there's no full biographical details of their radicalization. In Mexico, they're showing no past political activities of detainees. This is true of Joseph Romero and Russell Little, SLA, or Emily and William Harris, or Angela Atwood. There's no background of any of these people, no past political activism or point that they became politicized. In Mexico, they said the leftist organizations and students claim they never heard of any of the captured members. And again, in America, the Bay Area and all areas have rejected these so-called radicals when they appeared before and they surfaced. And the Washington Post went on that seven members of a group that originally called themselves the 23rd of September Communist League that was formed 6 years ago take no responsibility for their actions, and the seven former members said their organization no longer existed. It had crumbled long ago from outward repression and inward contradictions. And when political leaders were killed in the United States, certain people, like the head of the Prisoners Union, Popeye Jackson, there were messages left, and the real radical groups denounced the killings, and the same thing is happening here. Somebody is using their names and in Mexico, but the important thing is that the Washington Post carried this article recognizing that Mexico is saying they are rightist groups and not terrorists. The Washington Post said all of this is leading people to conclude that the present organizations in Mexico are rightist groups disguised as the left, a tactic used in Mexico before. And again, I say it's been used often ever since Adolf Hitler's days. The president, Echeverria, has spoken of a fascist offensive in the past months. One high government official said that the actions taken from the group, probably rightist disguised as leftist, was clearly learned, used to design to detract from any prestige or needs that the communist or the leftist groups enjoyed in Mexico. They want to provoke the repression of the legal left, it was stated by somebody high up in government. Some persons have gone so far as to circulate anonymous pamphlets in which they call on the military to intervene to prevent the country from falling into Marxist hands. Now, that's what these congressional committees are about in Washington right now, asking for National Guards and troops and armies to save us from the far left and the leftists. They refer to these great leftists that are going to overthrow the country July 4th in Washington, D.C. The motive explained in Mexico is that the industrialists and businessmen amassed great wealth in the past 30 years, want to protect their investments, are afraid of the left, and go to any length to blame it on the left. The current wave of terrorist violence combined with the student unrest and the killings of peasants participating in land takeovers are seen here as warnings by the conservative groups. You have, as I say, the Hitler type of violence, the Reichstag. You have in Argentina this kind of terrorism and beating taking place of the left, and the goon squads in Brazil killing the leftist leaders. In summary, what's going on in Mexico is what is going to be taking place in the United States more and more, and has been taking place. The name of organizations, fronts that don't exist any longer, like the two members of the SLA, Emily and William Harris, are in Los Angeles starting their trial today, but there's people using the name SLA around the country. You get people arrested who have mysterious backgrounds that won't fill in their past, groups that don't recognize them. The only people who gain from this terrorism and leaving names around, I'm a communist, I'm the SLA, I'm the George Jackson Brigade, these groups, the only one who gains is the far right and low-level persons, prison guards, low-level police, or witnesses on the street, a woman banking at Carmichael Bank. These people are slain in the interim, and the use for the tax squads, the special tactical squads, are put into formation, and the right gets tighter. And the important thing is that the left cannot organize. They become further infiltrated as being potentially dangerous. And another important thing I can't reiterate enough is that finally, the Washington Post has come out with a headline story, Killings Laid to the Left Look Like Rightist Work. Now, it's about time, and it's long overdue, and we should begin to examine our American kidnapping syndrome alone and ask where they went to trial, who was brought in, the Reg Murphy kidnapping in Atlanta. That was at the time Patty Hearst was kidnapped. That has not been properly investigated or exposed for the fraud that it was. There was a kidnapping of a George Jackson with a $30,000 ransom in Florida. Ben Maidenberg, a publisher in Akron, Ohio, that was supposed to be the American Revolutionary Army to feed the poor for $2 million. That was in March of 74. John Cozadilla, the kidnapping of his 8-year-old boy in March of 74 that involved Miami Cubans. These trials were never really brought out in the open who was behind them. There was a Betty Ann Valencia who was kidnapped, $25,000 ransom in March 74. A Eunice Kronholm in Minnesota, $200,000 ransom, March of 74. I have a list of all these potential kidnappings. One of John Patterson who was killed in March of 74 that involved a CIA agent who was charged only with kidnapping, even though John Patterson was found dead. And he's sitting in a jail. It's Billy Joe Kesey, the man who did the kidnapping, is sitting in a jail down by San Diego. There's a Robbie Richards, a 6-year-old, whose father got a note for $100,000, an Oakland attorney in March of 74. There are many kidnappings. I have a list of 19 that happened within a short time period, and every one of those cases involved the potential of federal agents, the far right, Arab oil money, the CIA. They all had the earmarks of provocateur type kidnappings, and I will be doing an article on that shortly, and the expose, what happened to the trials, what happened to the murders, to show how the far right can create a climate of terrorism and create the opinion that kidnapping and terrorism is an American institution, whereas if we investigated all of those, or 80% of them, we would find that the CIA is provoking these, just like the Park Police in Washington, D.C. is using CIA intelligence agents now, 1976, against their charter. Another example of the CIA training that hasn't been prosecuted, that was supposed to go to grand juries, that was totally covered up, it was in Chicago just a year ago, and I bring it up as an example of domestic CIA training intelligence that is brought out in the news one day, makes the headlines, maybe one good article exposing it, and it's covered up. The CIA trained domestic intelligence agents in the work of demolitions, bombings, use of weapons, and these weapons can be used at home as well as overseas. And in Miami, the Cubans are taken to CIA bases with no markings, where they're given explosives and trained. Miami alone has a secret police of 200 to 300 men that they admit who are trained in violence and counterintelligence. They use dummy fronts to carry on their activities. One of these dummy fronts is in Hialeah, Florida. It's an egg factory. One of their own operatives was killed recently and mysteriously in February 76, Jose Antonio Pratt. Another company that was used as a CIA front down in Miami was the Zenith Technological Services, which is a CIA headquarters located in a number of office buildings and warehouse at the University of Miami in the South Campus. That was written up in this Gainesville Journalism Review that you can order from me. If you missed the address, the first of the show, you can write to me and get a copy of that for 50 cents. Zenith Technological Service not only had a dummy front organization under the Roland Corporation as a CIA front for training for violence, it was an electronics firm that allegedly was doing weapons research for the Defense Department. In Miami, Frank Sturgis, Watergate defendant, recently gave a TV interview on his behalf. He was hiring a woman to kill Fidel Castro. Castro's girlfriend was supposed to poison him. And Sturgis was supposed to have given up his CIA contacts after the Watergate arrest, even though he's working with anti-Castro Cubans. But another Watergate defendant, according to CIA Director Howard Osborne, was working for the Roland Corporation, Zenith Technological Service, in Chicago in 1968. Now, Howard Osborne, the director of security for the CIA, sent a letter 2 days after Watergate, dated June 20th, it was 3 days after the Watergate arrest, saying that Bernard Barker was a CIA agent with Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, hired in 1960. He, along with the other Cubans, Eugenio Martinez, and Frank Sturgis worked for the CIA. And according to the Central Intelligence Agency, he terminated his CIA work July 31st, 66, to accept employment by the Roland Corporation, a subsidiary of Zenith Radio Corporation in Chicago, Illinois. Now, you remember at the time of the Watergate arrest, James McCord, E. Howard Hunt, and Eugenio Martinez had allegedly terminated their CIA work, but they still were working employed and full-time paid by the CIA. Well, according to the documents of the CIA officer, Mr. Bernard Barker was sent to the Roland Corporation, a subsidiary of Zenith, in Chicago, Illinois, in 1966. And that also was a training place in Miami, the same Zenith Corporation, in terrorism and violence with the Cubans in the Miami area. But July 66 is important because of the riots in Chicago at the time of the 1968 nominations, and also the plan for riots of the same men down in Miami for the 1970 elections. This was the same team we're working in 72 rather than we're working in 66 in Chicago just before the nominations. The document from the CIA from Mr. Osborne says that Bernard Barker was sent 2 years prior to these protests in Chicago. Actually, the conventions were earlier. The elections were in 68 and was located in the Zenith Corporation in Chicago. That was a front. And I have researched that the CIA, the police of Chicago, of Illinois in general, were behind violence, provocations in Chicago, and part of the hiding of the 113th Military Intelligence Division was in the Zenith Corporation. So the point I'm building up in this story today on Dialogue Conspiracy is that domestic violence was planned by the CIA with agents, with government money, military coordination at the time of the Chicago riots, at the time of the last elections, and therefore is very capable of taking place in 1976. If it took place in 68 and was planned for 72 and halted during Watergate, and if Watergate wasn't properly investigated, then the July 4th celebration in 76 that's coming off could have the same flavor of violence because of Watergate was not properly investigated and exposed, nor were the riots in Chicago. The Washington Post, just exactly a year ago in 1975, May 1875, and the Chicago Daily News, April 12, 1975, carried articles. One was called Police Scandal in Chicago, and the Chicago Daily News had a lead article called Army Role Revealed in Terror. And this is the point. If Mexico is picking up that the far right is doing terrorism to make it look like the left, and the United States Army had a role earlier in the Illinois area of planning terrorism in America that can be documented, because the terrorism took place with macing and violence and bombings, can't they be deployed again in 1976? And Mr. Kelly's talk about violence or congressional committees make it look like the left is violent. The April 12th issue in the Chicago Daily News states the links of the police department to the violence, that they were assisted by the Army. The police was assisted by the Army. The front for the Army was the famous Zealand Roland Corporation, the same one in Miami that Frank Sturgis worked with. But this time, Bernard Barker was stationed in this area. Bernard Barker, the co-worker with Sturgis and E. Howard Hunt, was active in political counterintelligence and was located in Chicago, according to the CIA agent, Mr. Osborne, just previous to this transaction. Right-wing terrorist activities took place in the Chicago, Illinois area, bursted out 69 to 71. The Army unit, headquartered in Evanston, was known as the 113th Military Intelligence Group. And they supplied the terrorists in the Illinois area, known as the Legion of Justice, that was their front, to make it look like a private group, not military supplied, but a private group known as the Legion of Justice. They were supplied with mace, tear gas, electronic surveillance equipment, and money for the informants. And at that time, they were a paramilitary organization, the Just Legion of Justice, headed by a Chicago lawyer who was the connecting link, referred to only in the Chicago Daily News and the Washington Post as the late S. Thomas Sutton. It would be interesting to know if Sutton died, like many of the Watergate witnesses or witnesses to the assassinations, as the story was breaking. John Knight of the Knight News Service died just the same week that his five-part expose on the Howard Hughes Empire was published in December this year. We only know there's a late S. Thomas Sutton, and I haven't had time yet to investigate it. But Sutton had the ties between the group that was going to do the violence, the Legion of Justice, and with the Chicago Police Department. The Army agents used, as I say, the 113th to recruit men to join them. The Secret Army used the 113th military group to join them, and they were either paid directly or Sutton, this attorney who's now deceased, gave money to pay their rent or expenses. Now, this recruiting for domestic violence had nothing at all to do with Army going overseas or Vietnam. This was the United States Army working with the police department in Illinois. The recruits for this organization that was to spread terror in that area were required, and this is interesting, to sign oaths. They pledged never to reveal their relationship to military intelligence. The recruits had to sign oaths. They were going into terrorism in the state of Illinois, and they had to sign an oath to not reveal their relationship to military intelligence. I wonder if there's anyone involved in the Francis Tavern deaths in New York City or in the terrorism at LaGuardia, the death that took place outside LaGuardia Airport this last December, 75. If counterintelligence are required to sign an oath never to reveal their relationship to military intelligence, and this is exposed in the Chicago Daily News, Sunday, April the 12th, 1975, would the same military sign the same kind of oaths not to reveal their relationship to military intelligence if our bicentennial celebrations break out in violence, which we've been warned about will take place? These people broke into offices and they stole records. This is typical Watergate counterintelligence type of thing. But they also were trained to create disturbances on the campuses, and they also used mace and clubbings, and they also were involved in destroying, there's an appearance of the Bolshoi Ballet, tear gases and so forth. Why can't these same people, as long as they've been secretly protected, the grand jury was going to investigate and there were going to be prosecutions. We know the CIA can't be prosecuted. There's a small clause in one of their charges. Why can't these same people, with secret oaths concealing their military connections, cause violence? And I keep repeating this because it's important. If they can do it in Chicago and get away with it, why can't they foul up the bicentennial celebrations to interfere with, say, Jimmy Carter's campaign or to cancel the elections? The right-wing terrorists not only had close ties to specific agents, this is a direct quote from the Chicago Daily News, to Attorney Sutton and Chicago Police Department and the 113th Military Intelligence Group, but they had a liaison with the police department in other Illinois cities. The right-wing terrorists had close ties to the Chicago Police, their own local area, the 113th Military Intelligence Group, and with police in ordinary cities. The individuals weren't doing it for money. The Chicago Daily News said they got everything they wanted They weren't given a specific salary. They're not on the payroll of the Central Intelligence Agency, but they got everything they wanted, and they weren't prosecuted by any courts, even though the grand jury investigated. So those are the two clues to how high up the military intelligence was working. The terrorist raids were conducted in Chicago at the behest of the Chicago Police undercover officers. I'm quoting directly from the news, Chicago Daily News. The police waited outside while raids were carried out at the Young Socialist Alliance at the New Left Film Group. They watched these raids in a similar way that raids are made now at the Safeway, the Bank of America, the electric companies, the airports and restaurants, and the police remain silent. They give themselves fictitious names that aren't investigated. The people are never found that were involved. When they're found, they always have government ammunition and weapons. And then they fall back and say, these American terrorists say that their arsenal were stolen. I have a friend living in my own home area whose son was caught stealing an American flag from a school over in Pacific Grove. And he almost had to go to jail for this for a long sentence. He's on probation for 3 years. You can't steal a flag from a school hardly without being caught. And I can't believe that chemical weapons and arsenals and all of these weapons are being stolen. It goes back again to that show I did 2 weeks ago on Dialogue Conspiracy that I referred to earlier today, where the CIA is giving gentlemen silencers, weapons, and then Russian weapons that can be dropped at the scene to say it's terrorism supplied by a Secret Service agent who guards President Ford when he comes to California. And when these men were using these weapons and a man who had the silencers called the proper authorities to say that the highway patrolmen and the LAPD are using these silencers and practicing with these weapons, the informant was murdered and the patrolmen weren't prosecuted, even though there were photographs of them to prove that they were using illegal silencers and Secret Service ammunition and setting up for more violence in America. The man who tipped them off was murdered, and the murderers were used even then by the same people to continue working for another year or two before another murder took place. The police waited outside while these raids took place, and there was complicity between the police, the army, and the terrorists in Chicago. And you can't make a clear mark where the money leaves off. The complicity of the police department, the military intelligence of the army, the U.S. Army, and mace is thrown, performances are stopped, people are clubbed, and the whole thing is that they train for terrorism in the United States, and these same people can be given names of organizations like the Emilia Zapata, the George Jackson Group, and do the same terrorism, only this time pretend that they are American terrorists in the memory of the SLA. They can disguise their uniform and leave writing on the wall and paint the SLA insignia all over. And instead of fighting the anti-war people this time, they can come out as American terrorists, counterintelligence, and the same people can be deployed. The Chicago Daily News said that the one person who was beaten in a raid by the terrorists was observed, the marked Chicago police cars sat by and watched passively and let some people escape, and the victims were beat, and the police cars sat there, and the violence was observed. And this is identical to the Gestapo in Nazi Germany. Agent provocateurs were trained by military intelligence and are allowed to carry on with terror, and the police allow it to happen. This is again from the newspaper. This article on American terrorism was exactly a year ago in Chicago, with a comment that the grand jury was investigating and there would be prosecutions. A year has passed and there are no prosecutions. It went on to say that anti-ROTC students wanted to stage a demonstration in one of the colleges, and that Legion of Justice members were told to join the group who didn't want ROTC on the campus and be the most violent persons there. And we know this happened during the anti-war movement, how many agent provocateurs supplied the agents and the violence. It goes back to the Tackwood allegations of the plans for 72 convention to kill congressmen or even the president and cancel the elections in 72. The new left completely infiltrated with Legion of Justice members, and the Army's connections with the Legion of Justice remain a closely guarded secret even today. The 113th Military Intelligence Group, and the important thing is that the 113th Division of Military Intelligence is now operating out of Fort Sheridan, north of Chicago, and doing very nicely, I suppose. But The Roland Corporation was a cover for the Army. Roland Corporation was a cover under Zenith Radio in Chicago, where Bernard Barker was sent in 1966, just a year prior to where all this action would be planned and fomented. It can't be planned in a day. Zealand Corporation, the Radio Corporation, was a front in Miami area where Frank Sturgis worked, a co-worker Bernard Barker, and both of them at the time of Watergate were funded by E. Howard Hunt of the CIA and the Pentagon alliances that he has. And they were working at the time of the Bay of Pigs operation, and one was deployed. I don't have no actual documentation whether Frank Sturgis or E. Howard Hunt was at the Chicago at the time of the riots, but Bernard Barker was sent there with the blessings of the Central Intelligence Agency. So with corporations used as dummy fronts, using back rooms for violence that can be provocateur kind, with the military intelligence working with these people, with the police training themselves in complicity to watching people being beaten up and their cars sit by, agent provocateurs infiltrating the left in every organization. And you have the makings here of the 1976 July 4th celebration. I had been in New York on WBAI, where they were soliciting the new left to come to Washington, D.C. for demonstrations, and a lot of people are getting into the action. They think it's very exciting to get into the act, to go to Philadelphia. The Queen of England is coming, and the Pope, Montini, formerly the OSS, is supposed to be coming, and I can't imagine the amount of National Guards or the security it's going to take to protect these people, or what's going to happen in Washington, D.C., but I really fear that the setup for provocateur violence is going to be there, because the guards are being called, the police are being called, and the biggest thing is that the Democratic candidate has not been allowed to win since John Kennedy won in 1960. And it would take a big brahu of a July 4th type of gathering in order to cancel any elections we'd have in 1976. And the chances of Jimmy Carter winning are so great that I think that it would be a perfectly right time to take a few lives. And because the Secret Army organization was covered up with no prosecutions or investigations by the Senate or the Watergate Committee, the San Diego plans for violence and the plans to kill Richard Nixon, Andrew Topping's plans in New York City covered up by the Watergate teams in Congress, and the use of the Army and the CIA in so many, many areas that I've studied with agent provocateurs and the deployment of them, that I feel that the July 4th setting is perfectly ripe for any kind of massive violence which we've been warned about, whether it's killings or chemicals, and surely the left will take it. And we have allowed these things to go for so long, we're really powerless to stop them. I speak about them because hopefully they won't happen, but if they happen, you can look back maybe and reconstruct what happened in terms of the forces moving against us. And as I say, I'm glad that the Washington Post ran the article in Mexico that they're catching on the terrorism from the right and not the left. And maybe we can go in, if we have time, to our past American kidnappings where you'd find they were the right and not the left. Well, let's hope there isn't this violence. And we'll study some more about it next week, some other subjects. I'm going to Howard Hughes some more and other matters we've put aside for a few months. I'll see you next week on That Long Conspiracy.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for many years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California.